that's gonna trouble the water.
Who are those children all dressed in red?
That's gonna trouble the water.
Must be the ones that Moses led.
That's gonna trouble the water.
Wait in the water. Wait in the water, children. Wait in the water.
God's gonna trouble the water.
All dressed in white.
God's gonna trouble the water.
Must be the ones get ready to fly.
God's gonna trouble the water.
Wait in the water.
Wait in the water, children.
Wait in the water.
God's gonna trouble the water.
Dressed in blue.
God's gonna trouble the water.
Must be the ones that made it through.
God's gonna trouble the water.
Wait in the water.
Wait in the water, children.
Wait in the water.
God's gonna trouble the water.
God's gonna trouble the water.
Yeah, yeah, you know
God's gonna trouble the water.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
God's gonna trouble the water.
Did you plug it into the?
No, we don't have to plug it in there.
No, I'm talking about the power source.
Yeah, it's still plugging in power
source.
Oh,
I was about to say.
All right.
Oh.
Welcome to the Telling the Tennis Show by Partisan Voices of People.
I'm Randall Jefferson.
I
am Pat Edward.
Welcome back, Pat. Glad to have you sitting next to me again.
It's good to be back.
You know,
pause.
Hopefully, Brett will come in here and do what he's got to do because he wasn't here on time as usual. How you doing, Brett? Our show looks at major issues impacting the nation and region from a bipartisan perspective. We want to hear from you, our listeners. Call, join the conversation. Our call-in number is 1-888-329-3306. That's 1-888-329-3306. The phone lines are now open. You can also send us your comments via social media. Our Twitter handle is @ToneAndTenor. Our Instagram handle is @ToneAndTenorRadio. Well, this is you could also like us on our Facebook page. Just type in the words Tone and Tenor in the Facebook search engine to find us. This is our last episode of Black History Month, you know, and then we'll move into elections, and then the women will have a whole month, a whole 31 days out of our 28. You know,
don't do that. So
I know Pat misses some of this. Yeah, but we've been holding it down while he's been doing what he had to do, and you know, glad he's back with us. And hopefully he'll be here because it's going to be, as we move into election season, it's going to be hot.
It's going to get real shaky
it's
out here,
get
y'all.
Hot,
especially with these district lines,
district lines and all. So we did have a opening. Video, but we're going to hold off on that video. And but our topic today is Black History Month, still striving for inclusion and respect politically. And, you know, that's an interesting thing, especially, you know, today as the president announces, I guess you're going to say makes good on his campaign pledge of announcing the first African-American woman to the bench, the Supreme Court, and you know, it was the former Supreme Court justices clerk. So, you know, hopefully, as folks have been saying, that we won't, our judges will not be part of legislation, but actually do the job that they're supposed to do. And with that said, why the topic, you know, why would even say Black History Month, still striving for inclusion, and the key word in this, Pat, is respect politically.
Yeah, but a lot of it is the diversion of diversity and inclusion, because honestly, like, even it's so funny, I was having a conversation, so, well, y'all don't know this, but I love away games, so visit Democratic or independent events. I also go to Republican events. Mm-hmm. You know, me and Randall intersected at one the other night, where it was just so funny seeing a lot of those weirdos in the room, and people that talk good but don't deliver. And this is not, well, listen, if you feel like this is a shot, take it however you want. But basically,
he's back.
What I was happy to see was something different in the Germantown area. So definitely shout out to Wanda Walker for having the gall to let them have that event in the neighborhood.
Well, and, not just the event.
And it was shoulder to shoulder in there.
Actually allowing the RNC to have their new engagement center.
Yeah.
You know, right, in right the on neighborhood.
Wayne and Seymour in Germantown.
You know, in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You know, a shout out to the RNC.
Sure.
Know,
shout out to Calvin.
Calvin Tucker.
It was good to see him.
You know, shout out to Paris Paris Denard for coming up. You know,
Dave, who used to be the executive director for the Germantown Service District.
You know, look, as I said last week, if we're invited, we're there.
Yeah.
You know, we're not Republican, we're not Democrat, we're not independent, or we just show up.
Yeah.
You know, and
you don't want us to be show up, because if you don't invite us, we're going to be rude. I know I am. I'm just being honest with you.
But you know, again, thanks to the RNC in Paris for not actually shouting us out on their recording.
Oh, nice.
Nice. You know, we're friends with everybody. You know, I respected what Pat came in a little bit later, but I respected there was no name calling, there was no bashing. Mm-hmm. You know, they were putting the facts out.
Sure.
You know, and we're gonna discuss that even more, hopefully next week, with the RNC engagement officer Paris Denard, who is supposed to join us next Friday.
Yeah, I actually met him. He was actually really nice. I met him when I went to that environmental event with former Congressman
J.C. Watts.
Really personable guy, you know. I mean, I don't got nothing bad to say about him. I think, you know, his opinion or his views are his views, but at the end of the day, as a human being, you know, I respect that guy. So, mm-hmm.
That's the key word, respect. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's one of the biggest problems that we have amongst our folks, and you'll even hear it in the clip, you know, when it's played, the first Black presidential candidate that no one remembers. That's going to be interesting, because it's going to show how, if you want to look at one party or another, it's going to show how the circle is still evolving, and the same mm-hmm. things since 1912, and before, for over 150 years, we're still talking about today.
Yeah, and there's still a first this and a first that. That was actually one of the things that we spoke about last night when I was at the event in Northeast. Shout out to those folks. Rep. Martina White, who actually said a lot of stuff that I didn't disagree with. When she started talking about schools, crime, resources, how diversity inclusion is kind of used to kind of split when she broke it. It made sense.
That was new word. You know, yeah. Ever since George Floyd, we've talked about this, Pat. Mm-hmm. Ever since George Floyd, you know, everybody wants to be so-called politically correct and put in diversity officers or engagement officers in their offices, whether it be newspapers, whether it be TV, radio, corporations, political offices. Mm-hmm. This is diversity, inclusion, engagement officer, whatever they want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the same thing as when you look in corporations back in the day, the black folks that were in the HR department basically were the public affairs, public relations officers.
Yeah, more or less.
You know,
yeah.
So now they got a new title, a new name, and just another spin on what's going on. But respect, you know, one of the biggest problems when we talk about respect is that throughout the years, we have been, and through history, we have been able to be bought and or sold, just like in slavery.
Hmm.
When you really break it down,
wow,
you know, bought and sold, whether it's a and I've said this, a turkey, whether it's a uniform. But when you look at the, you know, you weren't here when we played Malcolm X's House Negro versus the Field Negro speech.
Yeah.
And at the end of the speech, he said, "We still have those today, and I'm a field Negro."
Yes, he did say that with conviction too.
You know, and this is what goes on. And you know, when you think about it, in our political arenas, who's sitting at the top?
The money,
and somebody that doesn't
then everybody
look
else.
Like us.
Yeah.
You know, And I thought it was real interesting as I looked at this and thought about it. I said, "Well, how do we end this 28 days? You know, I'll never let that go."
Well, so here's the thing. So it's funny. So for the person that I work for on the, you know, during my day job. So yeah, I know I work part time for the state. So I actually did some research into that. So it wasn't. It was initially was a Negro Literature Month. Which actually highlighted, no, it wasn't the month, sorry, week.
Week, yes.
My apologies, it was week.
Right, with,
in 19...
Yeah, that was a...
I got it written down here somewhere. Yeah. But basically, Dr. Carter G. Woodson, who is the father of pretty much Black History Month, he wanted to highlight, you know, our achievements, because Black history is American history. You can say whatever you want. But it's not for debate.
There's no argument. Right here, we talked about that in early stages. Morgan Freeman even said it.
Yeah.
He said he'd rather not see, if we're going to talk about American history.
Sure, because that's what it is.
Because it's part of history. And that's absolutely where we are today, Pat. I mean, you know, if we want to talk from a political standpoint, only 162 African Americans have served in Congress out of a total of 12,348. That was up to the 116th Congress.
Wow.
And then if we into the 117th Congress, now we're talking about from the first United States Congress, which was 1789 through 2020, 162 African Americans have served in Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, the total number of all individuals who have served in Congress over that same period was 12,348.
What's the percentage on that? What do you think the percentage on that is? Because it ain't good. It's not a passing grade.
It's not even... Look, it's not even worth trying to look at. This is why, you know, why it says striving for inclusion. You think about it, striving for inclusion. That's crazy. Now, when you start bragging in the 217th Congress, which we are in today, you're talking about the largest amount of African Americans at one time, which was 52, out of 535.
But some of y'all made it, though. Right? Just like we got, what, 6 black billionaires in America? Yeah, somebody made it. Y'all good. No, we're not.
But you still got to reach back. You know, until you reach back,
Vito.
And everybody stops. Those of you that have been sitting in these offices for umpteen million years and keeps telling people like Pat, see, I don't need it. You don't need to tell me because I'm not trying to wait their turn. All of these young, I'm not even going to call them progressives, all of these young folks that have the willingness, the know-how, and the knowledge to serve and want to serve and do it for the right and want to do it for the right reasons, sure, are told to sit back, be quiet, and wait your turn. While others that want to yell, scream, jump up and down because they're going to say, Yaza, Mrs. Charlie. Oh, you come on in. We're gonna get you in.
Yeah.
That is not how you gain respect. And that is not how you strive for inclusion into something, whether it be Democrat, whether it be Republican, whether it be independent. And I hope that as we move forward into the upcoming elections, both nationally and regionally, that people will start to take a look and start to educate themselves. Mm-hmm. And look, I'm not mad at the Republicans. I'm going to tell you right now. They are going around and putting engagement centers in urban cities.
Putting their money where their mouth is.
Putting their money. I mean, they're making a big investment in urban cities, opening these engagement centers. I mean, think about it. On Wayne Avenue in Philly.
In East Germantown, of all places.
You know, and talking about, they're not telling you to come vote for them. They're opening up so there can be some sort of dialogue and engagement. Look, I saw some Democrats in there last night trying to be incognito, a state rep. You know, you don't have to, until you learn how not to be incognito and want to work across the aisle, whether you're, again, Democrat, Republican, or independent, you will not be respected.
Yep.
Because you're worried about what somebody else may say if you're in the room. You should have took off the hat, took off the mask, and let people know you was in the room.
Yeah, but that requires something called courage. But real quick, before we go to break, I want to, I actually wrote this, y'all. I don't even know if they posted it on the newsletter this month. But anyway, so I really want to give you guys some real history behind Dr. Carter G. Woodson, because he's actually one of my favorite people. He founded by this is a brief look at him, or a brief overview. He was a historian, a journalist, mm-hmm, and author. 1924, originally known as Negro History and Literature Week. February 1926, Dr. Woodson announced at a press conference to highlight the achievements, triumphs, and accomplishment of African Americans, which we now know as black people, which is weird. But anyway, Dr. Woodson chose February as the month of celebration because of the birthdays of abolition activist, mm-hmm, author and speaker Frederick Douglass,
right,
and lawyer, legislator, and the 16th president
That's
of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, in mm-hmm February. It became a national holiday in 1976, according to President Gerald Ford. Yep. Dr. Carter G. Woodson was born in December 19th, 1875, formerly enslaved illiterate parents. He worked hard to become a scholar, receiving his high school diploma in just 2 years. He attended Berea College, worked for the U.S. government as an educator superintendent in the Philippines before returning to his studies and in the States. Dr. Woodson received his bachelor's and master's degrees from the University of Chicago and finally his Ph.D. He was the second African-American man to graduate and receive that honor after W.E.B. Du Bois, who was the first. And this was when it was sundown town time. So what that means is they couldn't be on campus when the sun went down. Conversation for another time. He joined the American Historical Association, but was soon barred from attending conferences for filing grievances for the lack of African-American representation in American history. His appreciation and dedication to the representation later coined him as the father of Black history. And there you have it, folks. So
there you have it.
With that, we're going to go to our first break.
Little kid in a small town, I did my best just to fit in. Broke my heart on the playground when they said I was different. Oh, now I'm all grown up and nothing has changed. Yeah, it's still the same. It's a hard life on easy street, just white painted picket fences far as you can see. If you think we live in the land of the free, you should try to be black like me. My daddy worked day and night for an old house and a used car, to live that good life. It shouldn't be twice as hard. Oh, now.
George Edwin Taylor was the first African American to run for president as the candidate of a national political party. He was the nominee for the National Liberty Party, also known as the National Negro Liberty Party. Taylor ran against Teddy Roosevelt in the 1904 presidential election. A 1957 journal article by Howard H. Bell explains that the National Liberty Party was founded by abolitionists in 1840 to bring attention to the issues facing current and former slaves. For the most part, they didn't expect their candidates to get any major slice of the vote. They just wanted a platform to bring black rights in front of the nation. Taylor was a gifted speaker and an active labor rights activist, so he was the perfect man to go up against a charismatic Roosevelt. By the time Taylor moved to Oskaloosa, Iowa in 1891, he had established himself as a writer to reckon with and a fierce political force. Even early on in his life, George Edwin Taylor had already taken an interest in politics. He was actually more interested in labor policy and workers' rights than racial politics, and was very active in Midwestern labor unions and organizations at the turn of the century. His first political office was as a representative for the Wisconsin Union Labor Party, where he fought for improvements to the lives of the working classes. By the time Taylor relocated to Iowa, he was fully immersed in black politics and activism, starting the Negro Solicitor magazine and standing as a delegate to several national conventions focused on black issues. Though incredibly active in politics for most of his life, George Edwin Taylor wasn't loyal to a party. He was loyal to his cause and whoever would best move it forward. Like many free blacks of the immediate post-Civil War era, Taylor started out as a Republican, the Party of Lincoln, and a very different Republican Party than the one we have today. Taylor even served as a delegate at large for Iowa to the Republican National Convention in 1892. However, the work he and others did at the convention to advance civil rights was pretty much ignored by the party. Disillusioned and frustrated, Taylor returned home to Iowa and promptly switched allegiance to the Democratic Party. Black Pass notes that he led the National Negro Democratic League for several years, agitating for more representation for African Americans in the Democratic Party. Within the party, he emerged as a leading light of the movement to pay more attention to every man, regardless of color. When the Democrats, too, turned out to be less than responsive to issues facing black Americans, Taylor abandoned that party and hooked up with the National Liberty Party, a national third party dedicated specifically to black rights. After being active in politics for years, Taylor had started despairing of the increasing marginalization of black issues and rights. When he decided to run for president, it wasn't because he thought he'd win. It was to try to get the spotlight back on black concerns. In fact, in 1904, he wrote of African American rights, quote, "We are doomed." As the Encyclopedia of Arkansas notes, segregation was taking hold, the Jim Crow laws were repressing freed African Americans throughout the South, and the rights former slaves had won were disappearing. It seemed like no one cared about the working man, let alone ex-slaves. So when the National Liberty Party needed a presidential candidate, the fiery journalist was ready to step up. He knew he wouldn't win, and in fact, because of racist ballot laws, he couldn't even technically run in a bunch of states. But Taylor had to make an attempt to bring his issues to the national stage. While the National Liberty Party might have been started by abolitionists, it became George Edwin Taylor's true political home because of its definition of equal rights and liberty. Taylor really was an equal opportunity freedom fighter. His presidential platform focused on exactly that, equal rights.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights.
As Black Past highlights, his campaign had a focus on the universal right to vote, federal protection of equal rights, national anti-lynching laws, equal representation in the military, and federal pensions for all former slaves. Beyond that, though, he campaigned for residents of Washington, D.C. to have full voting powers and called for freedom for Puerto Ricans and Filipinos as well, as the Encyclopedia of Arkansas points out. These are incredibly progressive issues today, let alone in 1904, and they brought his pursuit of equal rights for all to a broader audience than ever before. No matter how fiery, flamboyant, and gifted George Edwin Taylor was, he knew that there was no hope for his campaign to be treated as anything other than a sideshow to the inevitable election of Teddy Roosevelt in 1904. He gave a newspaper interview where he stated, "Yes, I know most white folks take me as a joke, but I want to tell you the colored man is beginning to see a lot of things that white folks do not give him credit for seeing. He's beginning to see that he has got to take care of his own interests, and what's more, that he has the power to do it." Taylor received only about 2,000 votes in the national election for NPR, even though estimates at the time thought the total may have been as high as 65,000 votes. Taylor's name didn't appear on any ballots, the party was not endorsed by any newspaper, and there's no clear record of the number of votes today. But Taylor did succeed in his aim of highlighting the U.S. populations who were being consigned to second-class citizenship. In 1912, Taylor even attended a state convention of progressive Republicans to support the return of Teddy Roosevelt for a third term after the one-term presidency of William Howard Taft. While Roosevelt lost the election to Woodrow Wilson, Taylor had no qualms about supporting the very candidate who defeated him years earlier. Taylor went on to march in Wilson's inaugural parade. For a supposedly failed presidential candidate, George Edwin Taylor left a strong legacy. Though few remembered his losing candidacy, his work as a labor rights promoter and black rights activist paved the way for improvements all over the U.S. As NPR points out, prior to the Civil War, black people could only vote in 5 New England states and New York. And even after the Emancipation Proclamation, Americans of different backgrounds were far from equal in how they were treated. While Taylor had seen himself as equal to any man during his time as a labor rights activist in Wisconsin, others sidelined him and attempted to shove him out of leadership positions, as his biographer recounts. Taylor's lifelong conviction that no one's economic status, ethnic background, or place of residence should determine what they were able to do with their lives was truly progressive, and his pursuit of equal rights for all paved the way for later activists and politicians to push through the Equal Rights Amendment and more. By running for office and putting black issues front and center, George Edwin Taylor paved the way for later African-American politicians to make their groundbreaking moves. In fact, as his biographer relates in an article on History News Network, Taylor shares a number of coincidental attributes with Barack Obama, including sharing a birthday and running for president at the same age. Given his impassioned speeches, polished appearance, brilliant writing, and lifelong activism, it's shocking that more people don't remember the life and work of George Edwin Taylor. But even if he doesn't have the fame he rightly deserves, he still broke down barriers for blacks in politics and helped make today's activist culture possible. Taylor lived and breathed the ideas of black liberation and asserted that once black lives and issues were taken seriously, we could tackle issues of social inequality and equal rights for all, creating the kind of America that we all deserve, one that values nothing more than life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for all.
Welcome back to Tony Tenor here on WWDB. 860 AM. I almost forgot where we were at.
Yeah, man. you know.
That just, you know, we had to play that clip about George Edwin Taylor. He was the first black to run for president of the United States. And if you listen to it, or if you take the time and go back and listen to it, you'll hear how he was shunned by the Republican Party, and they had to do what they had to do. And then he went over to the Democrat Party, and then he felt as though they weren't doing what needed to be done to move the, as we would call it today, the agenda mm-hmm. of black folks, and to take black folks seriously. And if you really look at it from that standpoint, it's still the same or similar situation today, Pat.
Sure.
You know, there are those, if you really look at the Liberty Party and look at what happened, there were the crabs in the baskets back then.
Mm-hmm.
The crabs in the baskets are still here today because you got a little something and I didn't get anything.
Sure.
And this is going to, unless we change that mantra.
It's mindset, though.
And mindset.
Yeah.
And again, this is how it's by design. You and I both know it.
Sure, sure. If we're at each other's throats, you know, I told you when I was working at, I'm just going to say, when I was working at Education Works, that place is horrible, particularly if you're a black man. They tried to run me and my buddy Mabari against each other for a whole year before we figured it out. And then once we got to working together, you know, one of us had to go, right? Because there's never been a time in history where we've had, where we collaborate, mm-hmm. effectively collaborate, being competent and confident where it doesn't work out in our favor, mm-hmm. right? But it just comes down to putting your ego aside for a second, right? And not to say ego is not, because you do have to have some bravado to get stuff done or to work collaboratively, because if you don't believe you, people are not going to believe you. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that was always the thing. It was like, how do we get these dudes to work against each other, which is crazy to me. Because we were working with young people that looked like us. Mm-hmm. So you got to see what you want to be. Mm. And to have two examples, right? Two successful young guys that we were at the time, we were under 35. So it was really, it's crazy.
Well, you know what the problem was, you know, you didn't wait your turn. You didn't wait your
turn. We didn't have time. We had kids dying in the street.
You probably brought your chairs with you. Opposed to waiting for a chair.
Yeah, we surely chiseled it. We brought nothing but a bunch of lawn chairs, plastic folding chairs, all that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But real quick, back to your president thing. So again, Barack Obama was the first openly black president, right?
To win.
But there are some people who had some, you know, either African and or indigenous blood in them, starting with John Hanson. Uh-oh, it's about to get ugly. Thomas Jefferson, Andrew Jackson, Abraham Lincoln. Why is the penny, isn't the penny copper and his face is turned the other way? Didn't it look like he had a fro in that picture? Oh, okay.
Okay, he's back, people.
Warren Harding, Calvin Coolidge, and Dwight E. Eisenhower. I mean,
well,
folks,
we're all mixed up here,
yeah, right? Nobody's pure anything.
And you know, with that said, mm-hmm. you know, most people would say, if you have a little bit of black blood in you,
you are black.
You black.
Yeah.
You know, and this is what, you know, what's interesting when you talk about George Edwin Taylor, you know, you don't hear him, you don't hear people, especially some of these journalists that are running around. Mm. He was a writer. He was a journalist.
Yeah.
He started the Negro Solicitor magazine.
Yep.
You know, he worked in labor. He was in Wisconsin, of all places, Iowa.
Yeah.
You know, his family had to move out of Arkansas because if they would have stayed, they would have put back into slavery.
Yeah.
And they went to Chicago, and his mother died at 4 years old. These are things that are not on there. And what we play today, but you think about what people are talking about they have to overcome today.
Sure.
It's no different than what those had to overcome before. But the difference is, Pat, in my opinion, and if you look at those pictures, the older pictures, it's the pride.
Mm.
The sense of pride.
I agree with that.
You know, as I always talk about my great grandfather.
Pride and purpose, I would say.
Right. You know, so when folks start talking about, oh, we've made it, we ain't make nothing.
Mm-mm. Now, don't get me wrong. This is one of my favorite sayings. You know, I made this up a couple years ago. Like, America is literally the only place where you can be homeless, fat, and have cable. You know what I'm saying? So, like, there could be places that are a lot worse than this. But on the level of equality and equity, especially when it comes down to economics and finance, there are some huge unfair gaps. Mm-hmm. And then there's this thing where it's just like, oh, now we have to share. Listen, you got 100-something-year head start. Yeah, like, again, we talked about an article that was written, I can't remember, but it $16 trillion that's been lost over 40 years because of something as trivial and as silly as racism.
Right. And folks, if you go back 2 shows ago, no, last show, where I distinguished between racism and classism.
Yeah.
And that's part of, that's another part of our problem that, you know, Pat and I joke about this all the time, dark skin, light skin.
Sure.
But there is classism among black folk.
Absolutely.
You know, there's classism that if you've got a dollar more, I'm richer than you.
Yeah.
Or you're not allowed to tip. You know, I'm going to say this, you know, and this is in the county where Pat works. There is a place called the Nile Swim Club.
Yeah, in Yaden. Yeah.
In Yaden.
Yep.
The Nile Swim Club was opened because black folk could not go to the Lansdowne Swim Club, which is, I'd say about a mile, maybe a mile.
Yeah, Lansdowne, right around the corner, literally.
Not too far.
Like there. Literally around the corner.
But what in the past, once the Nile got opened, if you looked at what the people that were there, they were the light-skinned people. Now, my father was a little bit lighter than me, had hazel green eyes. When he went to the Nile, and Pat's seen my mother.
Yeah. She told me. She told us the story.
I was flabbergasted. They told her
she's
that
too dark.
We will accept Jeff, which is my father, but we don't know what we're going to do about Jackie because of her color of her skin.
And she's light skinned, y'all. Like, yo, when she told me that, and she has some stories for y'all. Matter of fact, we just need to bring her on the show and just let her talk one show, especially around the thing with UPenn. That one is hilarious. But no, seriously, y'all, like, this is something that is ingrained in American culture, like baking sugar into an apple pie.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's why it's so hard to get rid of. And it's not going to happen until both sides, all complexions, all races, colors, and creeds and sexualities really have some candid conversations with no cameras, right? And folks need to
take
notes.
And real people.
Yeah.
Not people that want to get money, that want to stay in office. People that are going to sit down. And until that happens,
yeah,
you know, we will not gain the inclusion or the respect.
Sure.
Politically. Yes, we've made... But if you look at the numbers,
we've made progress, but no strides. There's a difference. People keep confusing activity with accomplishment.
You know, 57 black reps.
On the federal level?
Right. Think about that. You know, think about it. You know, and if you look at these numbers, you know, and I thought about this after I started doing the research, Pat, and modern day, I could name almost all of them.
Yeah, that's a problem.
They was looking
real light when they did that. When they had that speech, it was like last month. They was looking real light out there. I think it was only like 20 of them standing on that stage.
But then if you really want to go down to the senators,
black senators, smaller.
I mean, Carol Moseley Blaine,
the new guy from Georgia,
Tim Scott, I'm losing my train of thought.
Yeah, the brother from Georgia who just won.
You think about it.
Yeah.
You could start naming them. You know, it just doesn't make sense. But you're going to sit here and you've got these people that, oh, I'm vice chairman of the Democratic Party or the state of Pennsylvania, or I'm this, I'm that. But what drives when you cannot pass a piece of legislation or cannot talk to folks across the aisle? We got a problem, folk. We got a problem. We got a real problem. So with that said, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to see if we have any answers, or where do we go from here as the shortest month for blacks ends in 3 days.
Hilarious.
Well, you better listen, my sisters and brothers, because if you do, you can hear there are voices still calling across the years. And they're all crying across the ocean, and they're crying across the land, and they will till we all come to understand. None of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free. One of us are chained. None of us are free. And there are people still in darkness, and they just can't see the light. If you don't say it's wrong, then that says it's right. We got to try to feel for each other. Let our brothers know that we care. Got to get the message, send it out loud and clear. None of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free. One of us are chained. None of us are free. Now I swear, you salvation isn't too hard to find. None of us can find it on.
Welcome back to Tony Tenner here on WWDB Talk 860 AM out of Bala Cynwyd, Pennsylvania. I'm Randall Jefferson.
I am Pat Edward.
You remember who you are? Who you are?
Who you are? Who you is? You is or you ain't?
You know, that's a great song, because you listen to what he says. None of us are free.
Yeah.
If one of us.
Yeah. So how we're going to segue into that is, according to the National Conference of State Legislators, Pennsylvania in 2015, legislative body was 91% white, 8% African-American or black, 1% Latino, and zero and every other. We don't even go with everything else is zero. 2020, 90%. And for Caucasian or white, for black or African-American, it's 9%. And for Hispanic Latino, it did not change, 1%. Democrat, 45%. Republican, 55%. Independent, 1%.
And even, let's go a little further back in history, since we talk about history.
Oh, let me give you a little bit more sauce. So in 2015, the makeup of, as far as generationally, it was baby boomers, 57%. But now, in 2020, which is 2 years ago, it went down to 28%, because, you know, a lot of heavy hitters were unseated.
Right.
But that doesn't mean the mentality. Right, because white is not a color; it's an attitude. It's an attitude. It's a way of life.
Well, look,
it is what it is.
Black is a color. My grandmother would say, "I'm not black; I'm Negro."
Sure.
Father Logan, the late Father Logan, who was light skinned, looked like a German, would continuously. He never said black, African American. He would say Negro.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the old school people, I guess, you know, that's old, people say, oh, that's old school. But this is when we talk about the pride, when we talk about the distinction, when we talk about the respect. That's how they gain respect. And think about this. If we want to go back in history, you know, and not knocking Democrats and not putting Republicans up on a pedestal.
No, not at all. That's not what we're doing.
The first black senator and U.S. representatives
was Hiram Reynolds.
Hiram Reynolds was a senator. Representative Benjamin S. Turner was from Alabama. Robert DeLodge was from South Carolina. Joshua Walls was from Florida. Jefferson Long was from Georgia. Joseph Rainey and Robert B. Elliott were from South Carolina. Now, think about this. What did they all have in common? They were Republicans. The same people that some of us that may or may not be Democrats or Republicans or independents were bashing, you know, oh, Republicans this, Republicans that. But your first Senate back then, they were there.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like somebody in 1980, 1970, 1960 said, oh, revelation, we got to start electing black folk. And these were Southern.
Yeah.
Remember what I said about Mr. Taylor, how he had to leave. When you think about Arkansas, when you think, we're talking about Mississippi, Georgia, Florida, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. Talking about, you know, you're talking about people walking around singing song, jump down, spin around, pick a bale of cotton.
Yeah, it's real.
Think about this. This is real. And we up here in the North think that we have arrived.
Nope. When the North was just as racist as down South.
If you know the history of Philadelphia and you read the history of Philadelphia slavery, you know, but yet and still, folks around here, and I guarantee most of these politicians don't realize you had black millionaires during those times. You know,
absolutely.
You ride by.
We were forced to work together.
By the Stephen Smith home on Belmont Avenue here in Philadelphia. He was a millionaire and he was black. Sales were made by a millionaire. Black entrepreneur. But we are so in tune, and nothing wrong with talking about Marcus Garvey, Malcolm X, Muhammad Ali. Not Muhammad Ali.
Nope.
I'm talking about
Martin
Luther King.
May God rest the dead, may he rest in peace. But
you know, talking about these folks, but when you dig down into the history, you know, and the Faust, the young lady that all of these black women in the state of Pennsylvania whose shoulders they stand on, that lived in the hood, what they would call today the hood, and around by the project in West Philadelphia, these women are on their shoulders, on her shoulders. You know, when they tried to lock out Shirley Chisholm, you know, talk about the people and talk about what people had to go through. But yet and still, all these folks today want to do is, how much are you going to give me? How can I create an organization and have no respect or no pride, and we'll still be systematically held down?
Yeah, some regards, unfortunately. But again, it comes more so than anything when it comes down to economics. I was sitting in the mayor's luncheon this morning. It was interesting just looking at the general makeup in the room. And again, this is like no shade to anybody. It was just interesting. But like, I didn't really see, it was a mixture though. It was a mixture of like government, private, entrepreneurs. You know, a lot of people that were there to hear the mayor's address. Unfortunately, I couldn't stay the whole time because I had to be here. So hopefully I can catch it maybe on YouTube or something. But there were some numbers that were thrown out, but there was never a breakdown in the numbers, right? Like when I talk to y'all, or when we talk to y'all, or Randall brings something up, like we always try to break it all the way down as far as we can in layman's terms so you can understand and digest it.
So that light bulb goes on.
Yeah, because you know, you should be informed. But unfortunately, we live in a society where it's better to be misinformed than uninformed.
You know, I just want to say something, Pat, you know, since we got a few times. Since 1940s, when decades of the Great Migration resulted in millions of African Americans having migrated from the South, no state has had a majority of African American residents. Nine African Americans have served in the state in the Senate since the 1940s. This is what we were talking about earlier. Edward W. Brooke, a Republican from Massachusetts, Carol Moseley Braun, Barack Obama, Roland Burris, who was appointed from the state of Illinois, all they were Democrats. Tim Scott was initially appointed Republican. Mo Cowan, appointed a Democrat from Massachusetts. Cory Booker, a Democrat from New Jersey. Kamala Harris, a Democrat from California. And Warnock, a Democrat from Georgia. Think about that.
Out of 100 senators.
This is since 1940.
I mean, it's
1940.
It's unacceptable.
And if you look at it, Roland Burris had been a guest on this show. He is also a frat brother. He was appointed to fill a vacancy. So you figure two were appointed. Three of those nine were appointed to fill vacancies.
Yeah.
Tim Scott, the Republican, was the one that went on to win a full term. So, topic, think about it, folks. We have come, you think we've come so far, but really we have a long way to go if we're going to continue to strive to be included, to have our young people, you know, to all the young people out there, don't wait to go to the table. Bring those chairs.
Yeah.
Be a Shirley Chisholm. Don't wait. Don't wait for somebody to say you got to wait your turn. Because you can now see from the history what has happened while waiting your turn. And don't let some other race or nationality or somebody else, because they're a party leader or somebody, buy you out or say, you just sit there, we're going to give you a job.
Yeah,
because this is why we're in the state that we're in today. You know, and I would be remiss, Pat, you know, again, we are now in, have a problem overseas with Russia and Ukraine.
Yeah, we knew that was going to happen.
And, you know, everyone, we have to keep those folks. And hopefully they'll come to some kind of resolution that will not result in a loss of, back to work, a loss of a lot of lives, you know. And you have to remember, but we also have to remember we're at war right here in Philadelphia, in Chicago, in D.C., in our urban cities. Where,
for basic human rights.
Hold on. Let's think about this.
Not civil. Human.
Hold on. Before we go, think about this. They're posting that the first night they lost, I think it was 30, I may have the numbers wrong, 30 lives lost in Ukraine. Okay, we are not at the end of February, and we've already lost to murder, gun violence, whatever, over 75 people in 2 months. So in 1 month, if we wanted to make a comparison of what's happening in Ukraine to what's happening in Philadelphia, same amount of people if it was 1 month.
Yeah.
Yeah, these are facts, people, not fiction. These are facts. You know, we can't glorify facts. We can't glorify what's going on. We can only speak fact to truth.
Sure.
And we have to hold people. And boy, oh boy, March is coming, April's coming, primaries are coming, and there's going to be some hot seats. And everybody's going to have an opportunity. If you want to come to Tony Tanner and talk, we're going to invite you.
Yeah, I'm not going to do it, though.
We're going to invite you. And several people outside of the Philadelphia area has already said they're coming.
Yeah.
Now, the Philadelphia's in Philadelphia, that you think you already have it won, I'm going to tell you, especially if you're going to be in West Philly.
Now, listen, some of these young cats coming for you, I'm telling you. I've seen it and heard it.
We got to get out of here, Pat. So, you know, it's great to have you back, man.
Yeah. Good to be back.
We want to thank our listeners. Follow us on social media. On Twitter, we are at Tone and Tenor. On Instagram, we are at Tone and Tenor Radio. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/ToneTenor. Thank you, Angel. Hey, Wes, thank you very much. For making everything happen. I'm Randall Jefferson.
I'm Pat Edward. Thank you for listening to Tone and Tenor, Bipartisan Voice of the People, a talk radio show here on WWDB 860 AM. No permanent friends, no permanent enemies, just permanent interests, y'all. Vote in the interests of your community, in yourself. See you next week.
Against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us.